The Weinstein Company.
As evening sky darkens into night, lights come on in the skyscrapers of a waterfront cityscape. The lights merge to form the words Miramax Films. Miramax Films presents in association with Endgame Entertainment, a hard-sharp entertainment production, with Gwyneth Paltrow, Anthony Hopkins, Jake Gyllenhaal, and Hope Davis. On a dark and rainy night, a young woman sits slumped in front of a TV, idly changing channels.
Now let's take a look at that nasty salt stain. This shirt is ruined, right?
Wrong.
Watch the stain fighting power of
the stain. If you can flip it, turn it, remove it, then you can fix it, replace it, or improve it. My kits include a guidebook.
Plus, they painted some people up like animals, and now it's over.
And stay that way. If you think you need to go to a gym to lose weight, stay in shape, and have a body like this, think again. This is Bowflex, the real workout.
When you're looking for a home, your real estate agent is a big part of your life. You need someone you can count on.
Well, I studied science and medicine and skincare and combined those two in our skin solutions line.
The title, Proof, based on the play by David Auburn. On a sunny morning, the young woman, her face tilted towards the sun, cycles vigorously through a park, and a man bungee jumps.
After all, Remax agents average more experience and more sales than other agents.
The woman's melancholy eyes stare at the TV screen. Screenplay by David Auburn and Rebecca Miller. The woman with shoulder-length blonde hair cycles onto a pathway that runs across green parkland towards a turreted collegiate building. Wearing a casual jacket over a denim skirt and boots, her hands thrust into her jacket pockets and a bag over her shoulder, she makes her way across the campus. Directed by John Madden. She strides down a corridor and collides with a male student.
Can't sleep.
On the rainy night, she sits up with a start.
Oh, you scared me.
A bearded man.
Sorry.
What are you doing here?
I just thought I'd check up on you. Why aren't you in bed?
Your student's still here. He's up in your study.
He's not my student anymore. He's teaching now. He's a bright kid.
What time is it?
After midnight.
So?
So?
He tilts his head towards the kitchen. She opens the fridge door.
Happy birthday.
Dad.
Smiling, she brings out a bottle of champagne.
Do I ever forget?
Thank you.
27. I can't believe it.
Neither can I.
God damn it, I forgot the glasses. Do you want me to,
No.
She takes a sip straight from the bottle.
This is the worst champagne I have ever tasted. It's not even champagne.
The bottle's the right shape.
Windy Valley Vineyards. I didn't know they made wine in Wisconsin. You want some?
I hope you're not spending your birthday alone.
I'm not alone.
I don't count.
Why not?
I'm your old man. Go out with some friends.
Yeah, right.
Aren't your friends taking you out?
Nope.
Why not?
Because in order for your friends to take you out, you generally have to have friends.
Ah.
Yeah, it's funny how that works.
You have friends. What about that cute blonde? What was her name?
What?
She lives over on Ellis Avenue. Used to spend every minute together.
Christy Jacobson?
Christy Jacobson, yeah.
That was in third grade, Dad.
Ah.
Last time I saw her was in a sandbox.
What about Claire?
She's not my friend. She's my sister. And she's in New York, and I don't like her.
I thought she was coming in.
Not till tomorrow.
She picks up the bottle and wanders out of the kitchen.
My advice, if you can't sleep at night, is to sit down and do some mathematics.
Oh, please!
You could do some together, the old way.
I can't think of anything worse.
Line by line, out loud, through the argument.
Are you sure you don't want any?
You'd better get cracking. By the time I was your age, I'd already done my best work.
How old were you?
Hmm?
When it started.
What?
You know, when... you got sick.
26, 27. Is that what you worried about?
I've thought about it.
Just because I went buckhouse doesn't mean you will. This stuff is not strictly hereditary. They know that now. Listen to me. Life changes fast in your 20s and it shakes you up. You're feeling down. It's been a bad week. You've had a lousy couple of years. No one knows that better than me. You're going to be okay.
I am.
Yes, I promise you. The simple fact that we can talk about this together is a good sign.
A good sign?
Yeah.
Oh, how could it be a good sign?
Because crazy people don't sit around wondering if they're nuts.
They don't?
Of course not. They've got better things to do. Take it from me. A very good sign that you're crazy is an inability to ask the question, am I crazy?
Even if the answer is yes?
Crazy people don't ask, you see?
Huh.
So come on, what do you say? Let's call it a night. You go up and get some sleep, and then in the morning you can...
Wait.
What's the matter?
It doesn't make sense.
Sure it does.
No.
Where's the problem?
The problem is you are crazy.
So?
So you said a crazy person would never admit that.
Ah, I see.
So?
It's a point.
So how can you admit it?
Well, because I'm also dead. Aren't I?
Her smile fades.
You died a week ago.
Aneurysm, 63 years old. The funeral's tomorrow.
Grief washes over her face. She takes a few steps backwards, sinks down onto her bed, and remembers colliding with a male student and her father, clean-shaven, carrying papers.
Oh, sorry. Did I hurt you?
No, it's okay.
Good.
Mr. Dobbs, you gonna stand there forever? This is my daughter, Catherine.
Hi.
Hi.
Mr. Dobbs is in our infinite program as he approaches completion of his dissertation. Time approaches infinity.
At home.
Catherine?
What?
I'm sorry, I just wanted to say I'm done for the night.
Good.
Champagne, huh?
Yes.
Celebrating?
Do you want some?
Sure.
I'm done. You can take the rest with you.
Oh, no thanks.
Take it. I'm done.
No, I'm driving. Well, I'll let myself out.
Good.
When should I come back?
Come back?
Yeah, I'm nowhere near finished. Maybe tomorrow?
We have a funeral tomorrow.
You're right. I'm sorry. I was going to attend, if that's all right.
Sure.
What about Sunday? Will you be around?
You've had 3 days.
I know you don't need anybody in your hair right now, but, someone's gotta go through your dad's stuff.
There's nothing up there.
There are 103 notebooks.
He was a graphomaniac, Harold. Do you know what that is?
Yes, he wrote compulsively. Call me Hal.
It's like a monkey at a typewriter. 103 notebooks full of bullshit.
I'm prepared to look at every page. Are you?
No. I'm not crazy.
She moves away from Hal.
Well, I'm gonna be late. Some friends of mine are in this band. They're playing in a bar up on Diversity, way down the bill. They go on around 2:30. I said I'd be there.
Great.
They're all in the math department. They're really good. They have this song called I. You'd like it, lowercase I. They just stand there. They don't play anything for 3 minutes.
Imaginary number.
It's a math joke. You see why they're way down the bill.
That's a long drive to see some nerds in a band.
You know, I hate when people say that. It's not really that long of a drive.
So they are nerds.
Oh, they're raging geeks. But they're geeks who, you know, can dress themselves and hold down a job at a major university. Some of them have switched from glasses to contacts. They play sports. They play in a band. They get laid surprisingly often, so it makes you kind of question the whole set of terms. Geek, nerd, wonk, Dilbert, paste eater.
She eyes him shrewdly.
You're in this band, aren't you?
Okay, yes. I play the drums. You want to come? I never sing. I swear to God.
No, thanks.
All right, look, Catherine, Monday, what do you say?
Don't you have a job?
Yes, I have a full teaching load this quarter, plus my own work.
Plus band practice?
Plus I teach hockey to 10-year-olds twice a week.
You make me sick.
Look, I don't have time to do this, but I have to, if you'll let me. I loved your dad, and I don't believe a mind like his can just shut down. He had lucid moments, a lucid year, a whole year 3 years ago.
Sorry.
Look, let me... Wait. You're 27, right?
How old are you?
Doesn't matter, listen.
How old are you?
I'm 26, all right? When your dad was younger than both of us, he made major contributions to three fields. Game theory, algebraic geometry, nonlinear opera.
Don't lecture me.
Look, if I came up with 1/10 of the shit that your dad produced, I could write my ticket to any math department in the country.
She frowns at him quizzically.
Give me your backpack.
Why?
Because I want to look inside it.
What?
Just open it up and give it to me.
Oh, come on.
You're not taking anything out of this house.
I wouldn't do that.
You're hoping to find something upstairs you can publish?
Sure.
Then you can write your own ticket?
What? No, no. It would be under your dad's name. It would be for your dad.
I don't believe you have something in that backpack.
What are you talking
about? Give it to me!
Look, you're being a little paranoid.
Just because I'm paranoid doesn't mean there isn't something in that backpack.
You said yourself that there was nothing up there, didn't you? Didn't you?
She turns away, confounded.
Yes.
So what would I take, right?
You're right.
Thank you.
He shakes his head and goes to leave. She grabs his bag.
Oh, what the hell?
She opens it up and throws the contents onto the floor.
This isn't an airport.
She shakes out the bag and stares at the things on the floor. She turns her eyes resentfully and mistrustfully towards Hal. Hal's dark eyes look at her with compassion. He bends down to pick up the contents of his bag. Catherine crouches down to help him. They look at each other as they retrieve his things, among them drumsticks.
You can come back.
She comes past him and sits on a step with her head bowed. Her blonde hair is tucked casually behind her ears.
The University Health Service is very good.
I'm fine.
Also, exercise is great. I go running along the lake a couple mornings a week. It really clears my head. It's not too cold yet. If you wanted to, I could pick you up.
No, thanks.
All right, well, I'm gonna be late for the show. I better go.
Hal makes his way towards the door.
Good night.
Wait, you forgot your jacket.
Well, oh, no, you...
A notebook falls from his jacket. Catherine picks it up off the floor.
I'm paranoid.
Wait.
You think I should go jogging?
Just hold on.
Get out.
Wait.
Get the hell out of my house.
Explain.
You stole this from me.
I want to show you something.
Give it back.
Wait.
I'm calling the police.
What? Don't. Look, I borrowed the book, all right? Because I found something. Something your father wrote. Not math. Just something he wrote.
I'd like to report a robbery.
What? Will you put the phone down and listen to me?
A robbery.
It's about you. It's written
about
you.
Yes, he's in the house right now.
Look here. Here's your name.
I'm at 4655.
Catherine.
South.
Look, not a bad day. Some pretty good news from Catherine. I'm not sure what that meant. I thought you might.
When did he write this?
3 years ago. Machinery is not working yet, but there is cause for optimism. The machinery is what he called his mind, his ability to do mathematics.
I know.
Talking with students helps. So does riding in buses. Most of all, Kathy.
Catherine forgets the phone she's holding.
Her refusal to let me be institutionalized, caring for me herself, has certainly saved my life. Made writing this possible. Made it possible to imagine doing math again. Where does her strength come from? I can never repay her. Today is her birthday. She is 24. I'm taking her to dinner.
Catherine's father smiles cheerfully at her.
So, what are we going to do on your birthday?
Dad.
Let's get the hell out of this neighborhood. What'll it be? Let's go to Northside or Chinatown, Greek town. I know. What's good anymore?
Dad. I'm going to school.
When?
I'm going to start at Northwestern at the end of the month.
Northwestern?
I shouldn't have tried to sneak it out. I mean, I know it sounds stupid now, but I was going to wrap it.
Catherine sits with her hands wrapped around her head. Hal places the notebook next to her.
Happy birthday.
3 years earlier, on a breezy day, Catherine sits facing her father on a bench by a lake, with downtown Chicago on the far shore.
What's wrong with Chicago?
You still teach there. I'm sorry, that is too weird, me taking classes in your department.
It's a long drive.
It's not that long, it's half an hour.
Still, twice a day.
Dad, I'd live there.
You'd actually want to live in Evanston?
I'd still be close. I can come home whenever you want. Look, you've been well. You've been really well for almost 7 months now. I don't think you need me here every minute of the day.
White-haired Robert looks away uneasily. At home on the eve of the funeral, Catherine sits down at her father's messy desk next to a pile of notebooks. She opens the front door with a puzzled look.
Yes?
Someone here call the police?
Two policemen are on her porch. In an airport, a blonde woman rides an escalator and talks into her mobile.
No, honey, I think we should put the aqua plates on the registry and the brown couch. Your mother said she wanted to buy us a substantial piece of furniture, and that's the biggest thing that I could find that would fit in our apartment.
She heads outside.
Well, then don't worry about it, honey. I'll be home by tomorrow night. Yeah, let's just get through today first. Hold on a second. Hi! Huh? I don't know if she didn't pick up when I called. Hopefully better than yesterday. First thing I'm gonna do is throw her into the shower and get her out in the sun.
In the morning, Catherine comes out onto her porch. Her sister smiles at her.
Better. Much.
Thanks.
You feel better?
Yep.
You look a million times better. Have some coffee.
Okay. No, black.
Have a little milk.
Catherine sits on a step with her knees drawn up to her chest and watches her sister with a vacant air.
Have a banana.
No.
Claire hands her a mug, and Catherine takes a sip.
Well, it's a good thing I brought food. There is nothing in the house.
I've been meaning to go shopping.
Do you want a bagel?
No, I hate breakfast.
Claire puts the plate of bagels onto a trolley and makes a note in a small black book.
Coffee.
Still making those lists, huh?
No. It's a compulsion.
Do you ever cheat and tick off something you haven't actually done yet?
Well, I would only be cheating myself. Did you use that conditioner I brought you?
No, shit, I forgot.
Oh, it's my favorite. You'll love it, Katie. I want you to try it.
I'll try it next time.
You'll like it. It has jojoba.
What is jojoba?
It's something they put in for healthy hair.
Hair is dead.
What?
It's dead tissue. You can't make it healthy.
Whatever. It's something that's good for your hair.
Like what? A chemical?
No, it's organic.
It can be organic and still be a chemical.
I don't know what it is.
Have you ever heard of organic chemistry?
It makes my hair look, smell, and feel good, and that is the extent of my information about it. You might like it if you decide to use it.
Thanks. I'll try it.
Claire turns back with an amiable smile.
If you don't have anything to wear for today, we could go shopping downtown.
Catherine nods numbly.
Okay.
It'll be fun. My birthday present.
Great.
Is there anything else you need?
No, I'm cool.
Anything at all while I'm here?
Mm-mm.
I thought we'd have some people over tonight. If you're feeling okay.
We are burying Dad this afternoon.
You have to have something. People expect it. And it's the only time I can see any old Chicago friends. It'll be nice. I think Dad would have wanted us to have a good time. It's a funeral, but we don't have to be completely grim about it.
Downtown Chicago, and the two sisters are walking along a crowded street.
Mitch says hi.
Hi, Mitch.
He sends you his love. I told him you would see him soon enough. We're getting married!
No shit.
Yes! We just decided.
Yikes.
Yes!
Oh, when?
In January. You know, his job is great. I just got promoted.
Huh.
You will come.
Yeah, sure, in January. I mean, it's not like I have to check my schedule or anything, sure.
Do you know what you want to do now?
No.
Do you want to stay in Chicago?
I don't know.
Do you want to go back to school?
I haven't thought about it.
Well, there's a lot to think about. How do you feel?
Physically, great. Except my hair seems kind of unhealthy. I wish there was something I could do about that.
Catherine.
What is the point of all these questions, Claire?
Katie, some police officers came by while you were in the shower.
Yeah?
They're in a clothes shop.
They said they were
checking up on things there and want to see how everything was this morning.
That was nice of them. What about this?
They said they responded to a call last night and came to the house.
Yeah?
Did you call the police last night?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I thought the house was being robbed.
But it wasn't?
No. I changed my mind.
The police told me you seemed disoriented and abusive.
These guys were assholes, Claire.
They seemed perfectly nice.
They wouldn't leave. They wanted me to, like, fill out a report.
Were you abusive?
This one cop kept spitting on me when he talked. It was disgusting.
Did you use the word dickhead?
I don't remember.
Did you tell one cop to go have sex with the other cop's mother?
No!
That's what they said.
Not with that phrasing.
Did you strike one of them?
They were trying to come into the house.
Oh,
no, I might have pushed him a little.
They said you seemed disturbed.
They were trying to come in and search my house.
You called them.
Yes, but I didn't actually want them to come.
So why did you call?
Because I was trying to get this guy out of the house.
What is this man's name?
How? Harold Dobbs.
Because the police said that you were the only person there.
Because he left before they got there.
With the notebooks?
No, Claire, don't be stupid. There are over 100 notebooks. He was only stealing one. But he was stealing it so he could give it back to me. So I let him go so he could go play with his band on the north side. What about this one?
His band?
He was late. He wanted me to come with him. I was like, you're all right.
Is Harold Dobbs your boyfriend?
No.
Are you sleeping with him?
Ew! No! He's a math geek!
And he's in a band? A rock band?
No. A marching band? He plays trombone. Yes! A rock band.
What is the name of this band?
How should I know?
Harold Dobbs didn't tell you the name of his rock band?
No.
Well, is Harold Dobbs...
Stop saying Harold Dobbs.
Is this person...
Harold Dobbs exists!
I'm sure he does.
He's a mathematician at the University of Chicago. Call the freaking math department!
Later, they're in a cab on their way back to Catherine's house.
Mitch has become an excellent cook. It's like his hobby now. He buys all these gadgets, garlic press, olive oil spray. Every night there's something new. The other day, he made vegetarian chili.
What are you talking about?
Stay with us for a while.
I'm okay here.
Chicago is dead. New York is so much more fun.
Well, the fun thing is not really where my head's at the moment.
You look so tired.
I am.
I just think you could use some downtime.
Downtime?
Katie, please, you've had a very hard time.
I'm perfectly okay.
I think you're upset and exhausted.
I was fine till you got here.
But,
Catherine gets out.
Catherine!
She sees Hal across the street.
Who is that?
Catherine, looking strained and pale, strides up to Hal.
Harold Dobbs!
Hi.
Okay?
She turns to go, then rounds on her sister.
I really don't need this, Claire. I'm fine, you know? I'm totally fine. And then you show up here with these questions, like, are you okay? With that soothing tone of voice and, oh, the poor policeman. I mean, I think the policemen can handle themselves. And bagels and bananas and jojoba and come to New York and vegetarian chili? I mean, it really pisses me off, so just save it.
Claire shakes Hal's hand.
I'm Claire, I'm Catherine's sister.
Oh, hi, Hal. Nice to meet you.
So he had to go back and fix the paper in galleys. He pretty much held it together with baling wire. This is a man who, back in the UK at the age of 22, basically invented the mathematical techniques for studying rational behavior and gave the astrophysicists plenty to think about when he came over here. Men like Robert Llewellyn come into the world very rarely. And we will miss the man intensely. But the work will endure.
The speaker steps down from the lectern in church. A string quartet prepares to play. Catherine, with her long blonde hair combed and wearing a denim jacket over a black dress, sits stony-faced next to her sister. She blinks rapidly, then gets up and starts walking towards the lectern, with her head bowed purposefully. She leans into the microphone.
I'm not on the program.
Claire, in immaculate black, covers her mouth in embarrassment.
Wow. I can't believe how many people are here. I never knew he had this many friends. Where have you all been for the last 5 years? I guess to you guys, he was already dead, right? I mean, what's a great man without his greatness? Just some old guy. So you probably want to catch up on what you missed out on. He used to read all day. He kept demanding more and more books. I was getting them out of the library by the carload. There were hundreds. And then one day I realized he wasn't reading. He believed aliens were sending him messages through the Dewey Decimal numbers in the library books. He was trying to work out the code. He used to shuffle around in his slippers. He talked to himself. He stank. I had to make sure he bathed, which was embarrassing. Oh, then he started writing 19, 20 hours a day. I got him this huge case of notebooks. He used every one. I dropped out of school. You see, he was convinced that he was writing the most beautiful, elegant proofs. Proofs like music.
Claire bites her lip. Hal, sitting hunched in his seat, sighs deeply.
I'm glad he's dead.
Catherine steps down from the lectern and doggedly walks up the aisle. Claire steps out of the front pew behind her.
Catherine.
Catherine quickens her pace. Halfway up the aisle, Hal gets up and follows her out.
Catherine!
Frowning as if conducting some internal dialogue with herself, Catherine stops still.
Don't call the cops.
I can't believe I just said that.
No, definitely push the envelope.
I think I need to go home.
And I'll drive you.
No, it's okay, I'm gonna walk.
It's a long walk.
Thanks.
Hal, dressed in a black suit with a black tie over a white shirt, watches her slender figure head away from the church. Later, she sits on the lakeside bench where she'd sat with her father. At home, Claire is with friends at the wake.
Well, the daycare is excellent, and we're starting to apply for preschools now, which locks you into a commitment.
Claire gulps down champagne.
Oh, it does?
Wow. Yeah.
Do you ever miss Chicago?
No.
She glances over her shoulder.
I mean...
At Catherine across the room.
You have the house now, though. You and Mitch should move back.
Hal moves towards Catherine, who's taken off her jacket.
You look great.
She fidgets awkwardly.
Claire gave it to me.
I like it.
It doesn't really fit.
Sure it does.
You can't prove it.
Well, I can try and disprove the opposite. I can prove that it doesn't not fit.
How?
I could take a vote.
Claire drinks with a male guest.
Dear old man. Hell of a guy.
Thank you.
Too bad he went nuts. Hell of a guy anyway. What do you do?
I'm a currency analyst. I probably inherited 1,000 of my father's talent. Are you a mathematician?
Ooh, Christ, no. Theoretical physics.
To the physicist.
Drink up.
Catherine gives an agitated sigh.
When do you think they'll leave?
No way to know. Mathematicians are insane. I went to this conference in Toronto last fall. I have never been so exhausted in my life. 48 straight hours of partying, drinking, drugs, papers, lectures.
Drugs?
Amphetamines, mostly. I mean, I don't. Some of the older guys are really hooked. They think they need it.
Why?
I guess there's this fear that your creativity peaks around 23 and then it's all downhill from there.
That's what my dad thought.
I guess all the really original work, it's all young guys.
Young guys?
No, there are some women.
Really? Who?
There's a woman at Stanford. I can't remember her name.
Sophie Germain?
Yeah, I think I've seen her at meetings, but I don't think I've met her.
She was born in Paris in 1776.
Then I've definitely never met her.
Catherine pointedly looks away.
Oh, I'm Sophie Germain. I'm stupid. Germain primes.
Right.
Like, double them and add one, you get another prime. Like, two is prime, double plus one is five, also prime.
Right. Or 92,305 times 2 to the 16,998th plus 1.
Hal's dark eyebrows shoot right up.
That's the biggest one, the biggest known one.
He nods at her admiringly.
Oh, what the hell are they doing here?
He hurries off through the crowded reception room. Catherine, her arms folded, frowns. The band plays. Claire tipsily dances to the music, shaking her blonde hair from side to side. Catherine, nursing a beer, smiles to herself. Claire, lost in her own thoughts, holds an electric candle, the kind used for vigils, high above her head. Hal, in a white shirt over a white t-shirt, is on drums, grinning from ear to ear.
Okay, now
we'd like to play a song in tribute to a great man, a great mathematician.
It's called I.
The singer steps back from the microphone and looks across at Hal.
One, two, one, two, three.
The band stand in complete silence. Claire giggles. Catherine, curled up in a basket chair, hears her sister's laugh. Hal raises his eyes to the heavens. And Catherine, focusing somewhere inside her mind, looks up and sees her white-haired father standing behind his desk, hands in pockets, staring vacantly. Later, Hal and Catherine sit side by side on a step in the middle of the party.
You're probably right. That book I stole? I'm starting to think it's the only lucid one, and there's no math in it.
Nope.
I mean, I'll keep reading, but if I can't find anything in the next couple of days, I'll...
Back to the hockey rink?
Yep.
And your own research?
Such as it is.
A woman steps between them.
What's wrong with it?
The big ideas aren't there.
Well, it's not about big ideas. It's work. You gotta chip away at a problem.
It's not what your dad did.
I think it was, in a way. He'd attack a problem from the side, you know, from some weird angle. Sneak up on it, grind away at it.
I don't know.
I mean, I'm just guessing.
I enjoy teaching.
You might come up with something.
It's not gonna happen. I'm 26, remember the downward slope?
Have you tried speed? I heard it helps.
Yeah.
Her glum expression brightens and she laughs. Hal grins back in delight. Her smile fades, and she looks at him solemnly. She leads the way into a room.
So, this is my room.
Hal pushes the door shut with a faintly teasing smile on his face. His arms folded across his body, he walks into the middle of the book-lined room and looks around, noticing several books on mathematics.
Ah, you read a lot of math.
No, I read Cosmo. That's just window dressing.
You're a mysterious person, Catherine, you know that?
She seems ill at ease.
You want a drink?
I'm okay.
You never got to celebrate your birthday.
Okay.
He holds a champagne bottle at arm's length and comes towards her and kisses her on the lips. She closes her eyes and stands quite still. He takes a step back.
I'm sorry, I'm a little drunk.
It's okay.
They gaze at each other, and he moves in again. He gently cups her face. She disengages and slumps down, running a hand through her straight blonde hair and not looking at him.
I'm a little out of practice.
Looking concerned, he sits down on the bed next to her,
I always liked you.
You did?
But then I thought, you don't flirt with your doctoral advisor's daughter.
Especially when your advisor's crazy.
Especially then.
I saw you at my dad's office once, do you remember?
I can't believe you remember that.
I remember you. I thought that you seemed not boring.
Her expression is solemn without a trace of irony. He takes his cue from her words and moves in to kiss her again. Gently, he lays her down on her bed. She tenses and covers her face with her hands.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I feel like I'm gonna crack open like...
Like what?
An egg. Or one of those really smelly French cheeses that ooze out everywhere when you cut them.
Nice.
Catherine smiles despite herself and lets Hal kiss her again. Downstairs, the band is still playing, without their drummer. The room is dark apart from the band's bank of multicolored flashing lights. The remaining guests are dotted around the room, sitting on the floor, lolling on the sofa, chilling out to the music. Upstairs, Hal gently pulls Catherine's black sleeveless dress over her head. He leans over her and removes his own white t-shirt. Looking into each other's eyes, they make love. Downstairs, Claire is fast asleep on a sofa. Upstairs, the lovers climax. Hal nuzzles Catherine's smiling face, but behind her closed lids, her emotion turns from ecstasy to misery, and she starts to cry, turning away from him.
Catherine.
He cups her face and gazes at her with passionate intensity. The next morning, in her floppy grey cardigan over loose pajama bottoms, she sits huddled on the stairs leading up to her father's house, playing with a thin strand of tiny beads around her neck. She tilts her face and looks vacantly up at the sky. Behind her, Hal comes through the door onto the porch and hovers a few feet away from her. She glances over her shoulder and sees him.
How long have you been up?
A while.
Is your sister?
No. The flight leaves in a couple hours. I should probably wake her.
Let her sleep. She was doing some pretty serious drinking with the theoretical physicist last night.
I'll make her some coffee when she gets up.
Sunday mornings, I usually go out, get the paper, have some breakfast.
Okay.
Do you want to come?
Oh. Well, I should probably stick around until Claire leaves.
Okay. Do you mind if I stay?
No. You can work if you want.
All right. Should I?
You can if you want to.
Do you want me to go?
Do you want to go?
I want to stay here with you.
Oh.
I want to spend the day with you, if at all possible. I want to spend as much time with you as I can, unless I'm coming on way too strong right now and scaring you, in which case I'll begin backpedaling immediately.
Her solemn face brightens and Hal leans in to kiss her. She breaks off the kiss with another shy smile and plays with the chain. He watches her intently.
How embarrassing is it if I say last night was wonderful?
It's only embarrassing if I don't agree.
So?
Don't be embarrassed.
They kiss again. She pulls away and presses her fists against her pale cheeks.
What?
She holds her hands in front of her face as she arranges her thoughts, then pulls the chain up over her head and hands it to Hal.
Here.
He examines the thin chain at the end of which hangs a small metal key.
Drawer in the desk in my dad's office.
What's in there?
His dark eyes bore into her, his lips set in a smile. He tries to read her face.
No.
She looks at him and shrugs. Taking that as a cue, he hurries to the door, and a worried frown clouds Catherine's face. He comes back and kisses her again. A smile returns to her face, lingers for just a moment, before her solemn, preoccupied expression returns. Her wide eyes fill with doubt. She makes up her mind and gets to her feet, just as Claire appears in the doorway.
Good morning!
Please, don't yell, please.
Are you all right?
No. Theoretical physicist.
What happened?
Thanks a lot for leaving me alone with them.
That band!
Yeah.
They were terrible.
They were okay.
They had fun, I think.
Well, as long as everybody had fun. Your dress turned out all right.
I love it.
You do?
Yeah, it's wonderful.
I was surprised you even wore it.
I love it, Claire. Thanks.
You're welcome. Well, you're in a good mood.
Should I not be?
Are you kidding? No, I'm thrilled. It's just... Hold on a second, Katie. I'm leaving soon, and I...
I know, you said.
Well, I would still like you to come to New York.
Yes. January.
I would like you to move to New York.
Move?
You could stay with me and Mitch at first, and then you could get your own place. I've already scouted some apartments for you. Really cute places.
Well, what would I do in New York?
Well, you could do whatever you want. You could work, you could go back to school.
No, Claire, this is pretty major.
I realize that.
I know you mean well, okay? Well, to be honest, you were right yesterday. It's been a pretty weird couple of years, and I think I'd just like to take some time and figure things out.
But it would be much easier for me to get you set up in an apartment in New York.
I don't need an apartment. I'll stay in the house.
We're selling the house.
What?
I'm hoping to do the paperwork this week. I know that seems sudden.
No one was here looking at the place. Who are you selling it to?
The university, they've wanted it back for years.
I live here!
Come to New York. We'll have so much fun.
I don't believe this.
It would be so good. You deserve a change. This would be a whole new adventure for you.
Why are you doing this?
I want to help.
By kicking me out of my house?
This is my house, too.
Oh, please. You haven't lived here for years.
I know that. You were on your own. I really regret that, Katie. And now I want to help.
You want to help now?
Yes.
Dad is dead.
I know.
He's dead. Now that he's dead, you fly in for the weekend and decide you want to help? You're late. Where have you been? Where were you 5 years ago? You weren't helping Ned. I was here. I lived with him alone.
I was working 14-hour days. I paid off the mortgage on this house while I was living in a studio apartment in Brooklyn.
You had a life. You had to finish school.
You could have finished school.
How?
I told you a million times to do anything you wanted.
And what about Dad?
He was ill. He should have been in a full-time professional care situation.
He didn't belong in the nut house.
He might have been better off.
He needed to be here. In his own house. Near everything that made him happy.
Maybe. Or maybe some real professional care would have done him more good than rattling around in this mausoleum with you looking after him.
What about his remission? 3 years ago, he was healthy for almost a year.
And then he went right downhill again.
Well, he might have been worse in a hospital.
Well, he might have been better. Did he ever do any work again?
No.
No, and you might have been better.
Catherine looks sharply at her sister.
Better than what?
You had so much talent.
You think I'm like Dad?
I think you have some of his talent and some of his tendency toward instability.
Claire.
In addition to the cute apartments that you've scouted for me in New York, have you by any chance devoted some of your considerable energies towards scouting out another type of living facility for your bunkhouse little sister?
No, absolutely not. That is not what this is about.
Don't lie to me, Claire.
The resources that I've investigated.
Oh, my God.
If you want to do, all I'm saying is that the doctors and the people in New York are the best.
Jesus!
And you wouldn't have to live anyway.
I hate you.
Don't yell.
I hate you.
What are you doing here?
Hal is holding a notebook.
How long have you known about this?
A while.
Why didn't you tell me about it?
I wasn't sure if I wanted to.
Thank you.
They move towards each other.
You're welcome.
What's going on?
God, Catherine, thank you.
I thought you might like to see it.
What is it?
It's incredible.
What is it?
Oh, it's a result, a proof. I mean, it looks like a proof. I mean, it is a proof, a very long proof. I mean, I haven't read through it all yet or checked it. I mean, I don't even know if I could check it, but if it's a proof of what I think it's a proof of, it's a very important proof.
Well, what does it prove?
It looks like it proves a mathematical theorem about prime numbers, something that mathematicians have been trying to prove since there were mathematicians, basically.
You know about this?
Catherine nods solemnly.
Is it any good?
What? It's historic. If it checks out.
What does it mean?
It means that during a time when everybody thought your dad was crazy, he was doing some of the most important mathematics in the world. If it checks out, it means you publish instantly, it means you hold press conferences, it means that all newspapers around the world are going to want to talk to the person who found this notebook.
Catherine.
I didn't find it.
Yes, you did.
No, I didn't.
Well, did you find it or did Hal find it?
Well, I didn't find it.
I didn't find it. I wrote it.
A flashback to a damp winter's morning. Catherine, wearing a woolly hat and scarf, a quilted jacket over jeans, hurries across the paved campus grounds, with patches of unmelted snow on either side, towards the university building. She comes past Hal and two students, one male, one female. The female has to pull Hal by the strap of his bag to get him to stop staring at Catherine. Inside, Catherine hurries along a corridor with a preoccupied look on her face. She comes down some stairs, goes through an internal door, and comes up to an office.
Ah, Catherine. So nice of you to drop by.
Sorry, I'm late.
This work of yours.
I know, I'm sorry.
It's interesting.
You think so?
In that it has nothing to do with the problems I'd asked you to solve.
It won't happen again.
What happened? You simply couldn't control yourself?
No, I thought I should get all those ideas down while they were in my head, and then it was morning, and I couldn't come in with nothing.
But this is the third time that inspiration's overtaken you, just at the moment when you had to submit to my idea of what it is you should be learning.
The third? Really?
Differential equations don't interest you.
No, they do. I mean, yeah, they absolutely do.
No, but they didn't last night.
Not as much as usual.
Professor Bhandari sits down and leaves through her work.
I mean, I'm worried that your work is deteriorating. There are some good ideas here, but it isn't a coherent mathematical argument.
Well, I didn't get time to finish it.
But mathematics isn't jazz. Even the craziest mathematics is working towards a proof.
Not all the mathematicians in my family are crazy.
I wasn't using the word in a clinical way.
Just for the record.
As she looks away, the silver-haired professor sits back in his seat and purses his lips.
How is your father?
I don't know. I haven't been able to get in touch with him for a week. He's fine. Last time I talked to him was fine. He's been fine for months now. Nine months.
Yeah, he was a great man.
He still is. You're gonna fail me, aren't you?
I'm giving you another chance to redo the problem set. You need an A. You're quite capable of earning one.
Thank you.
She gathers up her things and goes to the door.
Professor Bhandari?
Yeah?
Don't worry about me, okay? I'm gonna write you a really nice, fat set of answers that you're really gonna like.
Bhandari's eyes twinkle. Catherine pulls her maths paper out from under a textbook she's reading and makes some notes. Day passes into night, and she's still working. She throws down her pencil and picks up the mobile she has resting in the spine of the textbook and dials a number.
Hi, we're not here. Please leave a message.
Claire, hi. Listen, when is the last time you spoke to Dad? No, it's fine. It's just that I normally talk to him every day, and I haven't been able to get a hold of him. Well, I'm glad that you're sure everything's fine. I feel much more comfortable. Thank you. What do you mean, what could have happened? I mean, he could have had a car accident. He could have fallen down the stairs and broken his hip. He could be running naked down the Midway, for all I know. Yes, Claire, I know that you care about Dad. Yeah, as much as me. Okay, now can I please get off the phone?
She gets in her car and drives out of the college car park. She drives across the sleeping city and the shadow of the neon-lit high-rise buildings of downtown Chicago, the skyline dominated by the Wrigley building. Her face is anxious as she looks straight ahead of her through the windscreen. She leaves the city sprawl behind her and drives along a snowy country road. She comes through the front door of her father's house.
Dad?
She looks around worriedly.
Hello?
And strides from the living room lit by one table lamp in a corner, through to the kitchen piled high with unwashed crockery and pots. She looks at the state of the place and blinks nervously. She starts to run up the unlit staircase.
Dad?
She speeds up as she hurries towards the bathroom, where the light is on. She turns in the doorway, her face sick with worry. She runs into her father's untidy study. A lamp is on, but no sign of him.
Dad?
She stands still as she sees something. Blinking in disbelief, she makes her way towards the door leading to the garden. Her father is sitting at a desk on a raised deck outside a wooden cabin at the far end. She steps down into the unlit garden, with snowflakes billowing round her, and starts walking towards him. She slows right down as she comes nearer.
Dad?
Catherine, hi. What a surprise.
What are you doing out here?
I'm thinking. Writing.
It's 30 degrees. It's the middle of the night.
I know.
Well, aren't you cold?
Of course I am. I'm freezing my ass off.
So what are you doing out here?
It's too hot in the house. The radiators clank and I can concentrate.
She blinks back her astonishment, then hurries up onto the wooden deck and picks up her father's outdoor jacket and takes it to him.
I've been calling and calling. Did you not get my messages?
It's a distraction.
I didn't know what was going on. I had to drive all the way out here.
I can see that.
Why don't you answer the phone?
I'm sorry, Catherine. It's a question of priorities and work takes priority. You know that.
You're working?
God damn it! I'm working! I mean, I say I. Machinery. Machinery is working, Catherine. It's on full blast. All the cylinders are firing. I'm on fire. That's why I came out here to cool off. I haven't felt like this for years.
You're kidding.
No.
I don't believe it.
I don't believe it either, but it's true. It started about a week ago. I woke up, I came downstairs, made a cup of coffee. Before I could pour the milk in, it was like someone turned the light on in my head.
Really?
Yeah, not the light, the whole power grid. I lit up. It's like no time has passed since I was 21.
You're kidding me.
No, I'm back. I'm back. In touch with the source. The font, the whatever the source of my creativity was. All those years ago, I'm in contact with it again. I'm sitting on it. It's a gator, and I'm shooting right up in the air on top of it.
God.
And I'm not talking about divine inspiration. It's not funneling down into my head and onto the page. You know, I'm not saying it won't be a tremendous amount of work. It will be a tremendous amount of work. It's not going to be easy, but the raw material is there. I see places for the work to go. New techniques, revolution and possibilities. I'm going to get whole branches of the profession talking to each other. I'm sorry. I'm being rude.
Wreathed in smiles, he cups Catherine's bewildered face.
How's school?
School's fine.
You working hard?
Sure.
Faculty treating you all right?
Yes, Dad.
Made any friends?
Yes.
You dating?
Dad, oh,
no details necessary. If you don't want to provide them, I'm just interested.
School is fine, okay? I want to talk about what you're doing.
Great, let's talk.
This work?
Yes.
It's here?
Part of it, yes.
Well, can I see it?
It's all at very early stage.
I don't care.
It's not actually complete. To be honest, it's all in progress. I think we're talking years.
Dad, it's okay. Just let me see anything.
You really want to?
Yes.
You're genuinely interested?
Dad, of course.
Of course. It is your field.
Yes.
You know how happy that makes me.
Yes.
Yeah, I think there's enough here to keep me working the rest of my life, and not just me. I was starting to imagine I was finished, Catherine. Really finished. I was terrified I'd never work again. Did you know that?
I wondered.
I was absolutely bloody terrified. Oh. Then I remembered something. I remembered you. Your creative years were just beginning. You'd get your degree, do your own work. If you hadn't gone into math, that would have been all right. Claire's done well for herself. I'm satisfied with her. I'm proud of you!
He gives her a jubilant bear hug.
I know you've got your own work, and I don't want you to neglect that. You mustn't neglect it, but I could probably use some help. To be honest, I'd like you to help me, to work with me, if you want to. If you can work it out with your class schedule, I can help you with that and make some calls, talk to your teachers.
He holds his head in his hands.
I'm sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. Well, Jesus, look, enough bullshit. You asked to see something. Let's start with this. I've roughed something out. It's a general outline for a proof. It's a major result. It's important. It's not finished, but you can see where it's going.
Having discarded his jacket, he wanders onto the lawn with a notebook in his hands. He holds it up at arm's length to read it without his specs.
Here.
He holds it out to Catherine. She looks at it in awe and takes it from him with a grateful smile. Her father grins at her, his eyes twinkling, and nods at her to open it.
That's very rough.
Back to the present, and Claire searches through the desk drawer.
Was there any other work in here?
No, that's only...
Can I see it?
Hal hands Claire the notebook. She leaves through it, then runs on Catherine.
I'm sorry, So you wrote this incredible thing, but you didn't tell anyone?
I'm telling you both now.
Catherine, I'm sorry, but I find this very hard to believe.
Claire.
This is Dad's handwriting.
It's not!
It looks exactly like it.
That is my writing.
I'm sorry.
Well, ask Hal. He's been looking at Dad's writing all week.
Well, I don't know.
Hal, come on.
Hal inspects it.
I'm not a handwriting expert.
Well, whose writing does it look like?
It looks... I don't know what Catherine's handwriting looks like.
It looks like that.
Okay. Okay.
You know what I think? I think it's early and everybody's tired and just not in the best state to make emotional decisions. So let's just all take a breath.
You don't believe me.
Well, I don't know. I really don't know anything about this.
Never mind. I don't know why I expected you to believe me about anything.
Well, could you tell us the proof? And then that would show that it was yours?
You wouldn't understand it.
Well, tell it to Hal.
I mean, I could. We could sit down and talk it through. It might take a while.
You can't use the book.
For God's sake, it's 40 pages long. I didn't memorize it. It's not a muffin recipe. Oh, Jesus, this is stupid. Hal, tell her.
Tell her what?
Whose book is that?
I don't know.
What is the matter with you? You've been going through this other stuff. You know there's nothing even remotely like that up here.
Look, Catherine.
Okay. We'll sit down and I'll talk you through the proof, okay? Okay, if Claire will please let me have my book back.
Right. Okay, talk him through it.
It would take days. It still wouldn't prove that she wrote
Why not?
Because your dad may have written it and explained it to you later. I'm not saying that he did. I'm just saying there's no proof that you wrote this.
Of course there isn't, but come on! He didn't write it. I mean, he couldn't have. Even in the year he was well, he couldn't work. You know that.
Okay, all right.
You're supposed to be a scientist.
Here's my suggestion, all right? I know 3 or 4 guys at the department, very sharp, disinterested people who knew your dad, knew his work. Let me take this to them.
What?
I'll tell them that we found something potentially major, and we're not sure of the authorship. I'll sit down with them, we'll talk through it carefully, and then we'll figure out what we've got. I mean, it might take a couple days probably, but then we'd have a lot more information.
I think that's an excellent suggestion.
Catherine grabs it back.
Catherine! You can't take it.
Wait, I am not taking
it. Oh, this is exactly what you wanted.
Oh, come on, Jesus.
You don't waste any time, do you? No hesitation. You can't wait to show them your brilliant discovery.
I am trying to determine what this is.
I'm telling you what
you
it is.
You don't know.
I wrote it.
It is your father's handwriting.
Claire shakes her head pityingly.
Wait, at least it looks an awful lot like the writing in the other books. Maybe your writing looks exactly like his. I don't know.
It does look like his.
I mean, it's one of his notebooks, the exact same kind he used.
I told you. He gave it to me. I didn't show this to anyone. I wanted you to be the first to see it. I didn't know I wanted that until last night. I trusted you.
I know.
Was I wrong?
No.
I mean, I should have known that she wouldn't believe me, but why don't you?
I know how hard it would be to come up with something like this. I mean, you'd have to be your dad at the peak of his powers.
Just because you and the rest of the geeks worshipped him does not mean he wrote the proof,
he
Hal.
He's the best. My generation hasn't produced anything like him. He revolutionized the field twice before he was 22. I'm sorry, Catherine. You took some classes at Northwestern for a few months.
My education wasn't at Northwestern!
And so, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's too advanced. I don't even understand most of it.
You think it's too advanced?
Yes.
It's too advanced for you.
You could not have done this work.
But what if I did?
Well, what if?
It would be a real disaster for you, wouldn't it? You and the other geeks who barely finish your PhDs. Who are marking time doing lame research, bragging about the conferences they go to? Wow. Playing in an awful band and whining that they're intellectually past it at 26 because they are!
With her eyes brimming, Catherine's disappointment in Hal is palpable. He turns away, stung by her words. Claire's condescending expression freezes as Catherine starts to tear up the book. Catherine pushes the pile of her father's notebooks onto the study floor and leaves. Earlier, she's in the kitchen, serving up pasta.
When are you going to do some mathematics with me?
I can't think of anything worse. You want some Parmesan?
I'm all alone here. I have important things to say, and you're not helping. You used to love it.
Not anymore.
You know what a prime number was before you could read.
Well, now I've forgotten.
Don't be lazy, Catherine!
I haven't been lazy. I've been taking care of you.
She brings her own plate over.
You dropped out of school. You sleep till noon. You eat junk. You don't work. Dishes pile up in the sink. Some days you don't even get out of bed.
Those are the good days.
Those days are fever days, and you sweated them away. You'll never know what oceans of work you lost because you were moping. Moping in your unmade bed. Always moping, Catherine. Up until 4 in the afternoon sometimes, Catherine. I have you on my clock. You know I'm right. You know, I'm told by some very important people you know, I know.
Catherine, in a loose man's shirt, flicks through a magazine.
I've lost a few days.
How many?
I don't know.
I bet you do. I bet you count.
Knock it off.
How many days have you lost?
A month. Around a month.
Exactly.
Dad, eat your dinner.
How many?
33 days.
Be precise, for Christ's sake!
I slept till noon today.
Wearily, he puts his hand to his forehead, then lowers it.
Make it 33 and a quarter days.
Yeah, all right.
You're kidding?
No.
Amazing number.
It's a depressing fucking number.
Catherine, if every day you lost were a year, it would be a very interesting fucking number.
33 and a quarter years is not interesting.
Stop it, you know exactly what I mean.
1729 weeks.
1729, great number. The smallest number expressible as the sum of two cubes in two different ways. 12 cubed plus 1 cubed equals 1729.
And 10 cubed plus 9 cubed, yes, we've got it. Thank you.
You see? Huh. Even your depression is mathematical. Stop moping.
He reaches across for her magazine and tosses it to one side.
Do some work.
Placing a notebook in front of her. In the present, Hal goes into a college library and shows the same notebook to some colleagues. In her room, Catherine takes down one of her maths textbooks and starts writing. Later, Claire in her nightwear knocks on her door.
Katherine? Katie, honey?
Catherine lies awake on her bed with her back towards the door. As Claire comes near, Catherine's eyes close, then reopen. Claire touches her sister's arm.
Catherine.
In a TV film, a frightened young blonde woman is being stalked by a man with a clubbed foot somewhere in the countryside. She takes refuge in a house. Catherine's father stuffs popcorn into his mouth as he stares absently at the television set. Catherine sat nearby, is also munching popcorn, but is not watching TV.
I figured out how to get a lower bound for L. Modification of Landau's Eagle.
What if this L had a Eagle Zero? You'd need an effective version.
Catherine gazes at her father in surprise and awe.
Shit.
In the present, Claire is wrapping duct tape around a parcel. Wearing her father's tartan shirt, Claire busily picks up a box. She pulls across a chair, places the cardboard box onto it, and starts putting books in. In a maths classroom at the college, Hal paces up and down as two colleagues consult. A teacher writes formally on the blackboard, watched by two others. Earlier, Catherine, engrossed in her calculations, sits facing her father, equally absorbed in his writing. Dressed in her own clothes, Claire dusts a china plate and wraps it in a newspaper. Catherine leafs through some pages. Her father sits at his desk, busily writing. Hal pushes through swing doors and hurries along a college corridor. He shows the calculations to Professor Banari, who leafs through the notebook in his office. At home, earlier, Catherine reaches into her fridge, but withdraws her hand as a thought passes through her mind. She moves back from the fridge door, closes it, and looks around the empty room. She sits down and bends over her notes, resting her face in her hand.
Catherine!
Catherine picks up her pencil and starts to write.
Catherine!
She writes, "But star is true!" Exclamation mark. In another classroom, a white-haired man with a hooked nose holds his right hand to his chest as he reads from the notebook. Hal, standing nearby, watches carefully as the man mouths what he reads. The man puts down the notebook, and donning his glasses with a haunted air, he slowly turns to face Hal with a look of bewilderment. Another academic shuts the notebook, which Catherine presses to her chest as she stares numbly into the middle distance. Hal runs down a corridor. He shoots down a wide staircase, pushing his way past students. At home earlier, Catherine clutches the notebook to her and slowly walks towards the part-open door of her father's study. She stands in the doorway with a childlike expression of excited anticipation, looking at her father's back view as he sits at his crowded desk. She proudly eyes the notebook in her hands.
Catherine!
What?
Ah, geez!
He spins round in his chair.
Guy scared me. What are you doing there?
Sorry, I wanted to...
It's wonderful news.
He holds out his own notebook.
I think I've got it.
In the present, Catherine hurls books and papers to the floor of the study. Claire below hears the noise. Catherine? She races upstairs.
What's the matter? I stole it from him.
It's not mine.
I killed him.
I never should have written it.
Okay, you're okay.
I never should have written it.
Is it possible, honey, that... Is it possible that you just wanted to so badly and you deserved to do something special like this proof? Is it possible that you just imagined that you wrote it?
Claire rocks her sister in her arms, stroking her hair.
Possible? That it really was Dad's after all?
Catherine blinks hard, but nothing can dispel the bleakness in her eyes.
You didn't kill him, sweetheart. He just died, that's all. He just died.
Sometime later, two dry pot plants are all that remain on a shelf unit.
Hi, we're not here. Please leave a message.
Catherine, it's me again. I really need to speak to you. Please call me back.
The spacious wood-paneled house has been cleared, and Catherine, in a woolen top and loose trousers, wanders through its rooms like a ghost. A haunted, wretched expression in her eyes. In the street below, smartly dressed Claire crosses to the driver of a waiting car and hands him her bags. She goes back towards the house.
Claire.
Hal comes running towards her.
I thought you'd left.
I had to delay my flight.
Where's Catherine? I need to talk to her.
She's inside.
This thing checks out. I've been over it with two sets of guys, old geeks and young geeks. It's weird. I don't know where the techniques come from. Some of the moves are very hard to follow, but we can't find anything wrong with it. I mean, there may be something wrong with it, but we can't find it. I've not slept. It's real.
Thank you.
See, I had to swear these guys to secrecy. They were jumping out of their skins. One email, it's all over. I threatened them, I think we're safe. They're physical cowards. Where's Catherine?
This is not a good time.
She reaches for a bag.
You're leaving?
The flight is at noon.
You're taking her away?
Yes.
To New York?
Yes.
You're just gonna drag her away to New York?
She's entirely happy to come.
I'd like to speak to Catherine.
She doesn't want to see you.
Does she have any say in whether or not she goes?
She's been completely out of it, Hal. 5 days she wasn't speaking.
They look round to see Catherine on the porch. Claire goes towards her.
Do you want your coat, sweetie? It's cold. I'll get your things. The movers will get anything we've forgotten. Are you all right?
Claire goes inside. Hal, with his arms held across his chest, shifts from foot to foot. Catherine comes down the steps with her eyes lowered and walks by Hal, who's cradling the notebook.
It works.
She stops but doesn't look at him.
Thought you might want to know.
She blinks with an air of irritation.
I had to see you.
I'm leaving.
Just wait a minute.
What? Please. What do you want?
You have the book. She told me that she gave it to you, so do whatever you want with it. Publish, go for it, have a press conference. Tell the world what my father discovered.
I don't think your father wrote it.
She looks at him in utter disbelief.
You thought so last week.
That was last week. I spent this week reading the proof. I mean, I think I understand it more or less. It uses a lot of newer mathematical techniques, things that were developed in the 80s and 90s. Non-commutative geometry, random matrices. I think I learned more mathematics this week than I did in 3 years of grad school.
So
the proof is very hip.
Get some sleep, Hal.
What was your father doing these last 20 years? He wasn't well, was he?
Are you done?
I don't think he would have been able to master those new techniques.
He was a genius.
But he was nuts.
So he read about them later.
Maybe the books he would have needed are upstairs, in your room, some of them. He dated everything. Even his most incoherent entries, he dated. There are no dates in this.
The handwriting.
Parents and children sometimes have similar handwriting, especially if they've spent a lot of time together.
Interesting theory.
I like it.
I like it, too. It's what I told you last week.
I know.
You blew it.
This is yours, Catherine.
It's too bad.
It's all yours.
Because the rest of it was really good. I loved your dad. I always liked you. I want to spend every minute with you. That's killer stuff.
I meant it.
You got laid and you got the notebook. You're a genius.
Talk to me, Catherine. This proof is yours.
Forget it.
You'll have to deal with it eventually, you know. You can't just ignore it. You'll have to get it published.
Leave me alone, Hal.
We'll take it at least.
I don't want it.
Come on, Catherine. I am trying to correct this.
You can't! Do you hear me? You think you figured something out? You run over here all pleased with yourself because you changed your mind? Now you're certain? You don't know anything. The book, the math, the dates, the writing, all that stuff you just decided with your buddies, it's just evidence. It doesn't prove anything.
Okay, what would?
Nothing. You should have trusted me.
Hal feebly opens his mouth to explain.
I know.
They both turn as Claire comes out of the house.
Claire sold the house.
She wants me in New York. She wants to look after me.
What do you need looking after? You looked after your father for 5 years.
So maybe it's my turn.
There is nothing wrong with you.
We should be on our way, honey.
You can't just walk away from this, Catherine. Pretend like it never happened and go get a job at Urban Outfitters or something. Just take it.
Katie, honey, let's go.
Stay in Chicago. You're an adult.
I gotta go.
Please.
No.
Catherine, this isn't about me.
Katie, come on.
Don't you owe this to yourself, at least?
Goodbye, Hal.
She gets into the car. Hal steps back from the car as if in a daze. As it pulls out behind him, he starts to sprint down the street after it. Catherine hears him call, and her fingers press the window button. As he draws level, Hal tosses the notebook into the car. The vehicle accelerates, and Hal stops running, staring after it as he catches his breath. The car speeds along a freeway in the sunshine. It pulls into the departures precinct of Midway Airport. Inside the terminal, Claire energetically pushes the luggage trolley across the concourse towards a ticket counter. Catherine walks behind her with her arms folded, her eyes downcast.
Where are you going today?
To New York City.
Can I see some photo ID, please?
The sisters travel wordlessly up an escalator. In the departure lounge, they sit opposite each other, Catherine, her eyes lowered, her arms still folded. Claire idly plays with her engagement ring, then brings out her personal organizer. Catherine looks sharply across at her with a hostile expression.
Wow, you sure got a lot done.
Well, I had 5 extra days. I need some more coffee. Do you want some?
Am I on that list?
What?
Square away, crazy sister. Check.
It's not fair, Katie. I just want to take care of you.
Catherine closes her eyes and stretches her neck. Claire gets up. And Catherine's thoughts return to her father.
Catherine!
What?
Ah, jeez! Kai scared me. What are you doing there?
Sorry, I wanted to...
It's wonderful news. I think I've got it.
He hands her his notebook. She slips hers under her arm and starts to examine his.
What do you think?
Robert sits back down in his chair with an expectant look. He watches her intently. She doesn't look at him, her face draining of all colour, as she closes the notebook.
Wow, Dad.
Can you believe it?
I knew you had it in you.
That's a pretty mealy-mouthed response. What about it? What do you think? Let's talk it through.
Not tonight. I'm tired.
Hey, come on. This is it. This is the beginning of our real work together. Or you think I've stolen the thunder because I broke through first? This is only the beginning.
I think we should call it a night.
Look, read out the first couple of lines. We go line by line out loud through the argument. See if there's a better way, a shorter way.
No, come on, tomorrow.
I've waited years for this, goddammit. Let's do some work together.
Dad, I think we should get some sleep.
Not until we talk about the proof!
I don't want to talk about the proof.
Goddammit, open the goddamn book! Read me the lines!
She flinches and looks away, but takes the book from him. He moves back towards his desk, and leaning on his clenched hand, he looks at her challengingly. Slowly, she opens the notebook on the first page.
Let X equal the quantity of all quantities of X. Let X equal the cold. It is cold in December. The months of cold equal November through February. There are 4 months of cold and 4 of heat, leaving 4 months of indeterminate temperature. In February, it snows. In March, the lake is a lake of ice. In September, the students come back and the bookstores are full. Let X equal the month full bookstores. The number of books approaches infinity as the number of months of cold approaches 4.
On the snowy night in the garden, she goes on reading and smiles at him reassuringly.
I will never be as cold now as I will in the future. The future of cold is infinite. The future of heat is the future of cold.
Tenderly wrapping a coat round him, she hugs him and weeps.
The bookstores are infinite and so are never full, except in September.
She closes the notebook and lays it on the table, a worry line etched across her forehead as she looks at his eager, distracted face. He blinks as if he understands her anguish, then gives a vague smile.
I'm exhausted.
He walks out of the study without looking up at her. She watches her white-haired father trudge, head bowed, down the hallway and go off into his bedroom. She brings out her own notebook. Her eyes red with tears, she steps towards the desk. She pulls out a drawer, littered with clips and bits and pieces, and slides her notebook inside. She carefully locks the drawer with a small metal key. She closes her fingers around the key in her left hand and clasps both hands together. At the airport, Claire brings her a coffee.
Oh, I can't wait to get back to the coffee at home.
We have a place where we buy all our coffee. They roast it themselves. They have an old roaster down in the basement. You can smell it on the street. Some mornings you can smell it from our place, four stories up. It's wonderful. Manhattan's best. Some magazine wrote it up. Who knows? But it's very good.
I think I'm actually going to give up coffee because it's bad for my nerves.
Catherine?
Catherine starts to run.
Catherine!
She sprints along the crowded walkway. Segments of buildings, flashes of roads, passing cars, all stream past in random sequence.
How many days have I lost?
Catherine is sitting on a table in the campus grounds.
How can I get back to the place where I started? I'm outside a house, trying to find my way in, but it's locked. And the blinds are down, and I've lost the key. And I can't remember what the rooms look like or where I put anything. And if I dare go inside, I wonder, will I ever be able to find my way out?
Clutching her bag to her, she sits on the wooden table with the college entrance behind her, the sun bleaching her blonde hair. Her face searching for an answer. She looks up and sees Hal glumly walking along with a group of fellow students. As they go their separate ways, he drops back and sees her, looking in his direction. She shyly lowers her eyes and looks fearful. Slowly, he starts to walk towards her. As he comes near, she raises her soulful eyes to him.
Sometimes in my head, I think it works, and then sometimes I just think it's crazy.
There's nothing wrong with you.
I think I'm like my dad.
I think you are too.
She drops her gaze and nods unhappily.
I'm afraid I'm like my dad.
You are not him.
Maybe I will be.
Maybe you'll be better.
Catherine tilts up her head and her eyes look to him for reassurance.
It was like connecting dots. Some nights I could connect three or four of them. And some nights they'd be really far apart. I'd have no idea how to get to the next one if there was. The next one. It just seems really stitched together and lumpy. Dad's stuff was way more elegant.
Talk me through it. Tell me what's bothering you.
You got a bit of ground to make up, Dobbs. You know that?
She keeps her head bowed while he considers his reply.
And there's no way to prove that I wrote it.
No, but we could sit down, we could talk it through and determine if you couldn't have.
A slow, teasing smirk flickers across his face. Catherine blinks and nods her acceptance with the faintest of smiles. She starts to unzip the top of her bag. And she brings out the notebook. Her eyes look up at him, trustingly. Carefully and slowly, he sits down next to her, and she starts to leaf through the book.
If I go back to the beginning, could start it over again.
Here.
I could go line by line.
Okay.
Try and find a shorter way.
There are a lot of questions I have.
I could try to make it.
I really actually don't understand.
Better.
Sitting on the wooden table with the book between them, Al puts forward his views and Catherine listens. Audio description was by Veronica Hicks for IMS. DVD mix by Aquarium. A film by John Madden. Produced by Jeffrey Sharp, John Hart, and Robert Kessel. Produced by Alison Owen. Executive producers Bob Weinstein and Harvey Weinstein. Executive producers Julie Goldstein and James D. Stern. Executive producer Michael Hogan. Co-producer Mark Cooper. Director of Photography Alwyn Kuchler, BSc. Film editor Mick Audsley. Production designer Alice Normington. Costume designer Jill Taylor. Music by Stephen Warbeck. Casting by Billy Hopkins, Suzanne Smith, Kerry Barden. UK casting by Michelle Gish. Produced in association with Inside Track 1 LLP. With Roshan Seth. Cast in order of appearance. Catherine was played by Gwyneth Paltrow, Robert Anthony Hopkins, Hal Jake Gyllenhaal, Cop Danny McCarthy, Claire Hope David, Limo Driver Tobias Taskowitz, Professor Barrow Gary Houston, Friends at Party Anne Whitman and Leigh Zimmerman, Theoretical Physicist Colin Stinton, Band Vocalist Leland Burnett, University Friends John Keefe, Chip Chung, C. Jared Harris, Professor Bandari, Roshan Zeth, Airport Check-in Lady, Lolly Susie. First Assistant Director Deborah Saban, Second Assistant Director Don Julian, Script Supervisor Kim Armitage, UK Second Unit Director of Photography Jake Polonsky. Music Supervision Becky Bentham, Neri Pinder, Becca Gattrell for Hot House Music Limited. Music Editors Mitchell Connell, Peter Clark. Music Editor New York, Annette Kudrak. Music conducted by Paul Englishby, Nick Ingham. Music orchestrated by Stephen Warbeck. Music preparation Andrew Green. Recorded at Abbey Road Studios, Air Lyndhurst Studios, Lansdowne, Whitfield Street, and Hear No Evil Studios, all in London. Music mixed at Lansdowne Studios. Music recorded and mixed by Chris Dibble. Specialist musician, piano keyboards, Eleanor Alberga, Steve Loder, Stephen Warbeck. Electric guitar, John Paricelli. Electric bass guitar, Tim Harris, Dudley Phillips, Andy Pask. Marimbas, Frank Ricotti, Gary Kettle, Chris Barron, Stephen Henderson. Songs El Chocha Loca, written by Claudio Quattrocchi, performed by Loca. We Can Be Free, written by Bruce Elliott Smith, Frantic, Mark Lord, Lucy Wells, and Steve Joano, performed by Carol Dean. Mozart Quartet K157, Uganda, performed by Voodoo Dogs, written by Bob Ward and Larry Goldings. Slide 5 Inhaler, written by D. Warren, J. Warren, G. Gershoni. I'm Ready, composed by Willie Dixon, performed by Muddy Waters. I'll Never Be Your Maggie May, composed and performed by Suzanne Vega. Special thanks to Professor Timothy Gowers, Cambridge University. Donmar Warehouse, Manhattan Theatre Club, the University of Chicago, Jane Blumenthal and Eileen Brewer. Thanks to John Alperin, American Airlines, American Mathematical Society Annals of Mathematics, Princeton University, Larry Arbeiter, James Borger, Jennifer Berman, Aisha Bicknell. Chicago Film Office, City of Chicago, Mayor Richard M. Daley, Kevin Corbett, Laura DeMarco, DTA Travel and Betty Moore, The Eagle Bookshop, FedEx Corp, and Molly Smith, Four Seasons. GlaxoSmithKline, Stevenage, Karina Grodge, John Hattity, Harrods Personal Shopping, Mary Ann Hughes, Illinois Film Office, The Johns Hopkins University Press, Baltimore, Maryland. Dana Kibler, Seward Lai, Michael Luisi, Elizabeth McFarland, Steve McFarland, Marshall Fields, Chicago. Scott Martin, the Mathematical Association of America, Washington, D.C. Midway Airport, Chicago. Dan Nash, Northwestern University. Merrill Poster, Natasha Rafalski. Professor Paul J. Sally Jr., George Sheenshang, Shepperton Studios, London, England. And Nick Smith, Brooke Shipley, Transport Security Administration. And Alice Carr, True Film Fund, Tanya Windsor Blunden, Julia Wolf. The events, characters, and firms depicted in this photoplay are fictitious. Any similarity to actual persons, living or dead, or to actual events or firms, are purely coincidental. This motion picture was created by Miramax Film Corp for purposes of copyright law in the United Kingdom. Hard Sharp Entertainment. Miramax Films.